Well, good evening, everybody. This is Ryan Thomas. Thanks so much for joining me on tonight's Reunite group call. So glad to have you. Want to welcome all the existing members. Also want to welcome our new members as well. We've got a huge amount of questions. It's a staggering amount of questions. So I'm really excited to get into them. And I don't want to waste a lot of time so that we can answer as many questions as possible. Typically, what we do is a 5-star if you want to join in the conversation. There is so many questions that people have submitted. I'm probably going to keep the Q&A live stuff at a minimum just so that I can answer as many questions as possible. And again, remember, as you're listening to the answers that I'm giving, the different questions, always try to find the thing that you can resonate most with, the themes and the concepts that I'm talking about, so that you can best apply it to your specific situation. On this call, we're going to talk about family dynamics, enlisting other people to help combat alienation. We're going to talk about the impact of money and what I call pay to play in order to see your child. We're going to talk about standing up to the alienator and the regime. I'm going to share with you a conceptual idea with you that says that sometimes the answers you're looking for are actually questions. So we'll get to that. And I'm also going to share another good news update from one of our members that has something to share. So I'm happy to explain that as well. So let's dive right in. We're going to start with a question that was submitted by Steve. And he says, I have a son who's 15 and a daughter 13 who thankfully still have some custodial time with, although very limited. And my question is in regards to asking the thought-provoking questions. Do you have any suggestions as far as how to approach my son and daughter? It seems to me that it would make sense to approach he has two children, obviously, and he says, it seems to me that it would make sense to approach them with questions one-on-one on a casual basis as opposed to doing it while I have them both together, say, in a car, for example. And it seems that when I've approached them in the past when they're both together, they don't want to break ranks from the regime. They tend to fend off each other's answers, which are generally nothing more than invalid excuses for not wanting to spend more time with me. So I wanted to get to Steve's question, and this also kind of works with a question that was provided by Neil as well, who says, Ryan, I'm not sure whether you have an opinion on this because of your personal family circumstances, but do you have some thoughts on having non-alienated siblings get involved to help overcome alienation and kind of trying to work with the kids to make sure that everybody kind of can fight the battle and bring them together to kind of counteract alienation as well? So we've got some family dynamic questions that we're going to get to. So let's talk to Steve first in this idea of two kids. He wants to ask thought-provoking questions. He's, you know, familiar with some of the strategies that I talk about. And Steve, the answer is yes. You want to make every interaction with your child and your children separate and distinct. You want to find those things that you can connect with and resonate with each individual child. You can, of course, have personality differences. You can have different points of interest. You can have different things that hopefully you can either bond with or, you know, find things from the past that you can connect with. But anytime you bring the two together, you're absolutely right. You're going to get that group mentality, that mob mentality almost, where they want to be protective of each other. They want to be protective of the alienating parent because, again, their loyalty is all to them. So you want to really figure out how to approach each person as the individual that they are. You know, your kids are separate and distinct. And at the same time, also recognize that you may have different levels of breakthrough with each child at different times. You know, what a conversation may unfold with your daughter that leads her to potentially being open to new ideas or new opportunities with you doesn't necessarily mean that your son is going to be on that same timeline and same path. So find something that you can truly connect with them about, with each of them about. Walk them through a question based on a specific goal that you have for them. And this is important because a lot of times we just want to march to the end result, right? We want to have, you know, the big, big breakthrough. But a lot of times just finding what's the next manageable step or what's the next manageable breakthrough is going to help you achieve not only that, you know, kind of instant success or more short-term success, but it's also going to build for the long term as well. And here's what I mean by that. if you want to establish different goals for different kids, for the individual. So if you have one child that's a little bit more communicative but doesn't ever want to go deeper than that, well, then you may want to use that relationship to go deeper, to identify, like, how can I have, I'm having great, you know, surface conversations, right? So there's a dialogue, there's a little bit of a rapport, but man, it's sort of like, it is not a parent and child where I'm still walking on eggshells. So the goal is, how can I take this relationship deeper? Find out what those certain points of interest, questions, things that you can connect with would be for that child. Another child you may have little to no communication with. You don't have that kind of back and forth, little chit-chat stuff. It may just be very stilted conversation. So in that instance, your goal with that child would be, how can I just get to a normal conversation? How can I just get so that we can have a free flow of, even if, it's a beautiful day out there, isn't it? And how was school? And just getting those common things that you would be used to doing. So if you identify goals for each child as separate and distinct, then identify what's the best way to reach them and work on the relationship on an individual basis, that's absolutely what's going to help you build those separate and distinct relationships. And then also, which is what's going to delve into Neil's question, also, when you're making progress, let that progress be separate and distinct. Obviously, if your kids want to share with each other, they're going to do what they're going to do. But if you're making progress with one, don't try to then use that progress and go, hey, tell your sister X, Y, and Z. Or if you're making progress with your daughter, don't say, you know, your brother could really benefit from this kind of relationship. Why don't you see if you can get him to, don't use them as tools to help your cause, because it just creates additional pressure. It creates a job for them to do. And you don't want them focusing on a job. You don't want them to focus around stress and anxiety. You want to get them to focus on just having a different relationship with you. And when you task them with that stuff, it puts additional pressure on. And then, like a house of cards, if one thing starts to unravel, sort of everything falls, if that makes sense to you. So I hope that helps, Steve. And I think that you'll start to see some different reactions and some different progress points when you definitely work with them individually and talk with them individually. And then on to Neil's question, who has one alienated child and then another non-alienated sibling. He says, you know, what's your thoughts on having a non-alienated sibling get involved to help overcome the alienation of the younger and severely alienated siblings? Are there things that you think should be emphasized or avoided if this is an option? Should the non-alienated sibling be requested to help? For what it's worth, my non-alienated son is 19 and my alienated daughter is 16, and there have been no contact for all 4 years. Thanks in advance. So, Neil, again, kind of piggybacking off of what we just talked about with Steve, you want to think about this in a way that says, okay, I don't want to put my non-alienated child in the line of fire. I also don't want to make your 16-year-old start to have issues with the 19-year-old, and you want to be able to still preserve that relationship. So I don't think it's a great idea to use them as an active tool. What I would suggest doing is thinking about ways that just thinking about it differently and figuring out, can you use this relationship, or what aspects of this relationship could be shown to the daughter? What are some things that could be modeled in this behavior, and some of the things that could naturally, where your son may be a natural advocate for you? So the son and the relationship that you have, what are the dynamics that could be pulled out of there that your daughter may see? And what are some things that you can do, and even the two of you, if you're depending on that relationship, if it's like, look, yeah, I would love to be able to get her out of this mindset, and I see, so dad, what can I do to help? It's really more don't enlist him, but just figure out, well, you know, here are some of the things that maybe if she just sees us interacting, like, hey, I don't want you to, or here's you talking about me. I don't want to put you in the spotlight. I don't want to put you in any range of fire with the alienator, anything like that. But what kind of behavior could we just show her, hey, this is working out, and perhaps draw her in to seeing a different side of you. And again, some of that may sound like, well, I'm probably already doing that, or maybe isn't she already doing that? But I think it's where your focus goes, your energy flows. So instead of enlisting your son, actually just look at ways that you can do to emulate the behavior that you want to see. Give her an opportunity to see you in a different light, but focus on that being the end result rather than trying to, you know, say, hey, you know, nudge her this way, get her, you know, plead my case for me and something like that. So I think for all involved, this is a better route for you to go in. And I have seen where, again, using siblings against each other, you know, can create a recipe for disaster, especially when the alienating parent gets a hold of it and then turn, you know, says, look at, they're ganging up on you. They're doing all of these things to you. And your son gets kind of thrown out, you know, baby with the bathwater kind of thing. So we don't want that as well. So I hope that helps, Neil. Moving on to the next question is from Patricia, and she is a grandma. And she says, as a grandmother, is there any approach that you could recommend that I could use to be effective with the alienated parent, who's the mother? I'm, quote unquote, allowed access to the children while their father is not, which I find to be entirely sad and unfair. Thank you, Patricia. So, Patricia, I'm assuming that when you're saying, hey, what can I do to talk to or to reason with, or what would be effective to talk to the alienator, in that you want this opportunity that you have and this access that you have to be extended to your son. So in essence, you want to find some ways that you could plead your son's case so that he has the opportunity to see his children as well. And first, that's totally natural. That's totally motherly. That's totally what anybody would want to do, is to help. So what I'm going to say is sort of two-prong. One is what I will still say to you is the relationship with an alienator and dealing with an alienator is so fragile, is so combustible, is so always, you know, 1 minute things could be okay. You say one wrong move, man, you are cut out and you are disowned and you are, you know, demonized. So what I want to just caution you to be aware of in taking up your son's case like this is the possibility that if you go down that road, that your access to the children may actually be taken away as well. And I say this somewhat from experience because, you know, as I've talked about in different stages before, when I was having my issues with my dad right before our blackout, I had a great relationship with my grandma. And I maintained a relationship, and I was trying to even say to her, hey, I still want a relationship with you. I'm upset with Dad, but it doesn't have anything to do with us. And my grandma and my aunt, who's my dad's sister, you know, I got together with them, and they pled my dad's case to me. And I took it as a total attack. I took it as a guilt trip. It brought back all of the things that my mom had said, you know, these people are nothing. Who are they to say things to you? All the things that had been implanted in me that even as a, you know, as a teen that I was starting to somewhat build a relationship with them, it was so easy to knock that down because as soon as I came back and talked to my mom and said, this is what they said, you know, it was easier to get rid of my grandma and my aunt than it was even easier to get rid of my dad. And that relationship, I mean, I never talked to my grandma again after that standpoint. So I'm just concerned for you to stick your neck out too much and then lose that access to them. What I would, you know, think about doing is perhaps asking the alienator, hey, you know, would you ever consider revisiting, you know, the idea of letting, you know, so-and-so, whatever your son's name is, you know, letting him see the kids every once in a while. So you could do it as a question. You could ask it as, hey, are you open to it? Would you ever consider? That way you're not advocating. It's just more of a curiosity. So if you want to come at it from a curiosity standpoint, that's where I think you could do a little bit of investigating, testing the waters to see. But just don't do anything where you're feeling like you're choosing your son's side, because you will just get lumped in with him, and there's that possibility that it could go away. So I hope that helps you just think about it in a little bit different way. Again, I am overly cautious about something like this just because I've seen how easy it is to literally get rid of not just the target parent, but the target parents, family, friends, anybody that person's ever come into contact is all what I call fruit of the poisonous tree. And I think that's what I just want to make sure that you're being aware of in that. So again, go with the curiosity factor, test it out, ask for her opinion, ask for her thoughts, ask for how she sees things playing out. Because at least that way you're kind of saying, hey, the stage is yours. The mic is yours. What do you think about this? And of course, I don't know if she's narcissistic, but most of these people are all self-absorbed, narcissistic, borderline. Well, they'll be happy to at least, you know, state their case again. And perhaps, surprise, surprise, she might be open to it. But again, if you're asking for her to state her opinion or her thoughts on it, that's the least damaging or at least dangerous way to handle that. So that's what my suggestion would be for that circumstance. Okay, next question is from Tony. And Tony says, what's your relationship with your mom like now? I worry that the controlling parent is always going to be a part of the child's life and will continue to have a negative influence even if reconciliation occurs. And Tony, I will say that you're right. Not only is there the possibility and likelihood that the controlling parent will be a part of the child's life, but you know, the reality of the situation is what was done to the child has lasting effects. My mom can, and the regime and the negative things that they've done to me can affect me, still affect me to this day, and can affect me whether I have no contact with them, whether I live 20 miles away or 3,000 miles away. So I do think that's something for you to be aware of. And the only thing that I can truly say about this is, you know, it's important to try everything you can, like I'm sure you're doing, to extricate the kid from the alienation situation, to be there for them when that opportunity hopefully comes that they are open to it, to do some of the things that I've suggested in some of the strategies to help extricate them, and then just be aware that this is an abuse. It's not even like an abuse. It is an abuse, and that abuse will stay with the child. And as an adult, it's really important that the child, the adult child, seeks personal development, personal awareness. I have personally gone, you know, and worked with psychologists, and I've worked with life and business coaches, and those things that I believe were done to me mentally and how I see and perceive the world have integrated its way into, you know, how I think about myself and relationships and you know, professional opportunities and business and so on and so forth. Now, that's not to say that I don't consider that, well, that's just how I am. That's just how it's going to be. You know, I choose to better myself. I choose to do everything I can to change my thought process and to become a better person. And I think that is something that, you know, will hopefully be encouraged. And hopefully as your child grows up, he or she can be surrounded by other people like I have, who've been able to open their eyes, who've been able to provide support and love and different kinds of love and unconditional love for them. But the controlling parent will most likely always be in the child's life. And my relationship with my mom is, you know, the quick timeline or the quick, you know, chain of events was I realized the alienation that I had been under via an adult relationship, it being my marriage and my relationship that I was in. Those helped me spark the discovery about the alienation that I had been under. I dealt with it. I had a complete, you know, rug ripped out from under me, not only from what I was dealing with in that current situation, but also my entire past that I had thought I knew, I realized was all a lie, was all a fabrication and a manipulation. And I stuck with it and I continued to have a relationship because I didn't know how to break free. Even once I knew, even in my 20s, I still didn't know how to confront, how to really break free. I eventually did cut the cord, if you will, and realized that she was such a toxic person in my life that I could not have her in my life. I ended up having a blackout period with her, which you know, for a long time was absolutely glorious, because I was so sick of hearing her voice in my head telling me how to perceive the world and what to think and what to say, and that little snipey voice. It was really, really difficult. And when I allowed myself to break free of that, I could, and that voice started to go away. I felt like I'm thinking for myself, like truly thinking for myself. And then after a while, I am not a person that can hold a grudge or to be consumed by anger. And so it became actually almost like holding up a wall was taking just as much energy to keep her out as it was to just reestablish some sort of relationship and boundaries. And that's what I did. I, you know, kind of, you know, established this is what I'd like to have our communication like. I, you know, communicate via text with her maybe a couple of times every couple of weeks. I talk to her every couple of weeks. I visit her or she visits me. I see her about once a year. And so that's really the status of the relationship. And we've had good times and bad times and pockets of times where she's absolutely shocked me with some change that I've seen in her. As it relates to us, she is still this exact same person that she always was. She does not evolve, but she has made some improvements, with our relationships. And then there's other times where I feel like I'm absolutely back to square one. But she is still in my life, and the effects of the alienation at this point, other than doing what I'm doing now and turning that into a positive, I just choose to only let it affect me, understand that I can have some control over how much I let that affect me by having some awareness. Oh, I get it. This is why I'm thinking this way, or this is why I'm doing it this way. Okay, well, cancel that. I got to come up with a different thought process on that, or a different belief on that. The next question that you asked was, how do you balance, and then I believe this is a parent, how does a parent balance the need to look after yourself and your need to not provide any further ammunition to the regime? No matter what you do, you get criticized. Sometimes I want to put my foot down and say, no, I'm not doing X, Y, and Z or allowing this because it's abusive to me. But I also know that it'll be turned around to see, you know, your mom doesn't care for you. Like if I don't give a significant wedding gift, it'll be used against me. But I already gave a significant gift towards the day. And then despite I still have no part as a mother of the bride, my partner's not involved. So it's like nothing is ever going to be good enough anyways. And I totally hear you on that. I mean, that last thing, you know, nothing is ever good enough. This is the epitome of an alienating parent. Nothing is ever good enough. It is a sliding scale. You think that you're going to hit it. And if I just do this, and this goes for the child too. And this is what your kids, I believe, over the course of time, as they get older, they're going to realize as they start to get into adulthood, when, man, mom or dad or whoever that alienator is like, man, nothing I do is ever enough. You know, here I think I'm going to hit a goal and then, oh, the bar slides up again. So that idea of nothing is ever good enough is exactly what it is. And that's where I think the best thing that you can do is to First, if you're in a situation, and I say this to everybody, if you're in a true situation where you feel it is abusive, no one deserves to be treated like that. I don't care if it's your kid or not. You have to step away. You have to take a break. You have to take some time off. You have to go on a hiatus. Whatever you have to do, you know, no one should put themselves through feeling like that. I've talked to parents and heard from parents that feel like, I'm afraid that I'm going to get physically abused. There is no strategy. There is no nothing that I can say that would overcome that idea that if you truly feel like that, then you need to back off and step away for your own protection, for your own sanity, and not for nothing. In the event, in the belief that your child will someday come back to you, I want them to come back to a really as whole a person as they possibly can with you. And, you know, the more that they continue to break you and crush your hopes and your spirit and who you are, you have to consider the fact that you are also more to this world than just a mom or dad. It's an important part, but there are other things that you can give. There is other love that you can give. There is other love that you can receive out there. So I just want to make that clear that, to respect yourself enough that if there's certain times to put your foot down and say enough is enough, I think that that's appropriate in many, many circumstances, especially when you do feel like it's abusive. But I think to that point of nothing is ever good enough, this is where, you know, you have to just make a determination with what can I, in the worst case scenario, if my kid never comes back to me, what is it that I can live with knowing that I tried my best? So if you gave a nice gift, you know, if you gave $100, well, $150 would have been better. If you gave $20, well, $50 would have been better. So again, it's this sliding scale. When I dealt with this type of, I could go on and on about it, but just as an example, when I was caught up in this adult, when I was living away from home and I had a relationship and I was married and I was living multiple states away, I would perhaps come and visit for a weekend and I would get, oh, a weekend is all you can get? You can't come for a long weekend? And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I'll come for a long weekend. Okay, I come for a long weekend. Huh. You blow in and out of town for 3 stinking days. You own your own business. You could take a week off if you want. And I'm like, what? And I'm thinking to myself, I'm going crazy trying to please this person. And if I went for a week, it would be like, Ryan, you could have taken 2 weeks off. If you really, really wanted to and you really loved me, then you would have done this. And so all of you, all of you parents are dealing with the alienator coming at you saying this stuff, right? Or putting into your child's head that, you know, the same kind of stuff. Oh, it's never good enough what mom or dad does. And what I want to express to you is that at some point, a leopard is not going to change its spots. These narcissistic, alienating parents who are all about themselves and what they want and have this insatiable appetite to be the victim and all of these different things are someday going to swing back around on your child in a more direct way. And it is in those moments, like I had, that you go, what the heck? Like, this is ridiculous. And those are the types of moments, especially if there's somebody else in the picture that can go, yeah, like, why is your mom like this? Why is your dad doing this? This is crazy. And you go, okay, I'm not a crazy, right? This is nuts, right? This is not how normal families are. And somebody goes, heck no, it isn't. And you start thinking. And so the child starts making their own decisions about what they think is fair and what they think is reasonable. And all of a sudden they go, you know, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. And eventually, and this is where some of the stuff that I talk about, how to create those things, eventually they might get to thinking, you know, maybe mom or dad, whoever the alienating parent was, like, maybe this is some of the crap they were dealing with. Or if you can come back into their life in a way that hints that you may know, like, hey, is something going on with this? You ever have these kinds of issues? They're going, whoa, what do you have, a spy camera on my life? How could you possibly know that these things were going on? because the alienator's behavior doesn't change. They just change targets. And eventually, you may not be the target. Again, eventually, the child who chooses to be independent, who chooses to have their own life with other people, significant others, doing their own things, moving out, even going to college. How dare you leave the nest? Whatever that is, that target can just as easily be placed back on the child. And I am a living example. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't recognize it for what it was. But that target, which had long been off of my dad because they got him out of the picture and they won, mission accomplished, it then went to my wife at the time. And then when I stuck up for her and I chose her and a relationship with that, it came right back to me. And all of a sudden, I was in the crosshairs. So just understand that that this stuff is going to happen. So Tony, I hope that helps. And obviously, I hope everybody else can glean something from that as well. Barb asks, when you went through the blackout time with your dad, what did you tell friends about him? Were you neutral or did you bash him? Did you try to keep your broken relationship a secret? Well, it's really interesting because there's different times that I was saying different things. When I was going through the lead up to the blackout and then right after the blackout, yeah, I was trashing him all the time. You know, my dad, he doesn't do this and he doesn't do that, and he was never there for me. And I'm just saying the whole party line. When I started to get older and I went away to college, it never really came up. I would mention it, and some people would ask me, so what's up with your dad? But my family, the regime, was actually so powerful and such a presence. I mean, like, everybody would come to my dorm room. And again, I don't mean to, and some of my family members in the regime are dead now, so I don't want to seem like I'm talking ill of them in any way like that. But, like, my mom and my aunt and my grandparents would come into my dorm room when they would come and visit. And I mean, they would like take over my roommate. It was like, it was like, what are you doing here? I live here on the other days when you people aren't here. So I actually think that they were so powerful that eventually sometimes my roommate would be like, so like, what's up with your dad? And I was like, he's never really there for me. Really doesn't have, I was almost like apathetic. Like, he's just a jerk. He was never there for me, and I spew all that stuff, but I didn't have as much emotion around it. But I was not necessarily keeping it a secret. I just wasn't really, saying a lot to him or talking a lot about him. But I also think that my family was so strong that I don't think my roommate or some of my friends were like, hey, do you have any other family members that could come? Like, maybe your dad? Because I think they were like, oh my God, like, these people are crazy, And people aren't going to say your parents are crazy or your family's crazy. They just hope that they leave soon. I will also say that, again, in that mind of a child, I was actually doing some getting rid of some old stuff this past weekend and came across some college papers. This was my first year in college, and I came across a creative writing assignment. And I was actually – it was so bizarre to read, but I was reading this story that I was telling about the end of high school and my graduation, and – I talk about my dad was there at my high school graduation, and I'm reading this and it says, good, ha, he can see me walk across the stage and he can know that he had nothing to do with it and it'll serve him right. And it was all this, it was like reading a letter from my mom. And I was like, this is awful. And you know what's really interesting about it is I was saying these things a year later in a class, in a creative writing class where I was being so articulate with my words about what a jerk he was and how I was pushing it in his face. But you know what? Despite friends and family and other relatives that were out in the audience, and I was a senior class president, so I got to sit on the stage. So I got to look out at the audience. And guess what? I wasn't looking for my mom and my grandparents and my aunt and cousin so-and-so and my friends. You know who I was looking for in the audience? I was looking for my dad. And I was looking for my dad and my half-brother and my half-sister that I hadn't seen. And in those moments, it was not to say, ha. It was just to say, like, I wanted to see them there. I wanted them to see me, you know, sitting on the stage as the class president. I wanted to see what they looked like. I wanted to, you know, I just wanted my dad there. Despite all the trash I was talking that day, despite all the trash I was still talking a year later in college and continued to talk about. But that's how I actually felt. And this is why I always say, yes, your kids, you know, some of the kids and the things that they would say are absolute jerks, you know, are real a-holes in the way that they treat you. And I'm not saying this is true for everybody, but I say that this is more of a defense mechanism. It is more of something that it's easier to lash out than to unpack all of the feelings of hurt and longing for you and all of these different things. It's easier to lash out and make you the bad person than it is to confront and accept their feelings. It's easier to lash out to you, at you, because that's the way the popular party's going. Everything is against you. Because to turn around and tell the alienating parent that you want to see that other person, that you have feelings or that you could have pride and you want them to know your life, it's so much more difficult. So, Barb, I hope that that kind of gives you an idea of, you know, again, some of my perspective on this. Okay, now we're going to talk about money. I'm going to take a quick drink here. We're going to talk about money, and I'm going to kind of combine a couple of questions here because I got a lot of them. It's really bizarre. Mike asks, hey, you know, what are your thoughts, advice, or counsel when the target parent is positioned as parent as banker or parent as ATM? You know, he referenced calling, you know, parent as kryptonite, where anytime the parent comes around, you know, something bad happens. It's, you know, it's like that kryptonite and it makes Superman, you know, crumble. And that's what a lot of times the alienator makes of you. Whenever you show up, bad things happen. But he says, but, you know, what about when it's parent as banker or parent as ATM? And this pairs with a question from Mark. And Mark says, I have regular contact with my alienated children, but only when my ex wants me to buy something for them. In these instances, I'm allowed to go to the store and meet with them, always with the ex present. You know, the kids need a bodyguard from, you know, I'm sure what an awful person Mark is, right? And I buy whatever they need, and sometimes if I've spent a lot of money, I get to have tea or coffee afterwards. And he says, it's a totally unnatural relationship and I'm totally aware that I'm being used, but does this at least give the children some chance to see that I haven't abandoned them? he says, I've tried everything in the legal system, etc. And I think that this really underscores this idea, what I call in some instances, the pay to play. If you want to see your kid, pony up some money. If you want to have a relationship with your child, it's all associated with money. And at the same time they're doing that, they're also telling the kid, if you do something nice, he's just buying your love. If you put out tons of money, they may be saying, well, it's the least he can do, or it's the least she can do. They've been such an awful parent to you. The least thing they can do is pay for you. So it strips away gratitude. It strips away an appreciation. It strips away you as a provider or you as somebody who cares about your child. And these are destructive things that they're doing to you. And obviously you know this, right? But at the same time, like you're saying, it's like, well, this is at least an opportunity for me to have, you know, an engagement with my child and to be able to have some interaction with them. And what I would suggest that you look at is how can you have conversations with your children, depending on the level of communication it is, where you can actually have conversations about gratitude, about appreciation for time spent or for money or for gifts or things like that. And I don't mean that it has to be a pat on the back for you, but ask them a question like, Well, so now that you got this, how do you feel about, like, you know, so it's we went back to school shopping. Awesome. Well, we got your back to school shopping. So how do you feel about having all these new clothes? Well, I like them. They're cool. They're good. I needed new ones. The other ones I had were crap, and they were old and dirty and ripped or whatever. Awesome. So how do you feel now having new clothes and new whatever? So you don't have to make it about, hey, do you appreciate the fact that I did this? But allow them to actually have an appreciation for the material thing or the trip or the outing or whatever it is. Because if you can at least connect and spark their understanding and their appreciation for, yeah, this is going to be cool to have new clothes to go back to school with, or this is going to be great that I can now go on this trip. At least if you can get appreciation for the material thing over the course of time, you may be able to parlay that into appreciation for you. You may be able to have that subconsciously say, well, I got this good thing and I got this good thing and I got this good thing. And, oh, it was from mom, or, oh, it was from dad. And so what ends up happening is you either don't want to say anything because you don't want to look like you're trying to pat yourself on the back, or you will say something like, can I get a little damn gratitude here? You know, and they go, oh, really? All of a sudden we're supposed to be all excited because you took out your wallet? Oh, thanks so much after being such a lousy parent. But if you can actually put the gratitude or put the attention on the item and the benefit that that item can bring to them and the joy or happiness or opportunity it is, by nature, your influence in making that happen, you get a little cred for it. So that's what I would do, is actually not make it about you, make it about the benefit that you provided, and hopefully over the course of time, use that to, or, you know, allow that to sort of take hold and just keep them mindful of the fact that this is something good. And the fact that you did it is just a byproduct that will hopefully through, I don't know, osmosis or whatever it is, will just sink into them that maybe that's what it is. But if you allow them to just be like, oh, it's just a material thing, or it's just a trip, or it's just an opportunity that I can now go, and you just make it about the fact that you paid for it, well, then they just take everything for granted. They don't appreciate anything. And quite honestly, this is how the alienator is bringing them up. This is, I'm sure, how the alienator is bringing you up. This is how the alienator is bringing the child up. I know in my experience, I have always been a grateful person. I don't know where the heck I got it from, because if somebody did something nice for my mom or my family, she would say, and I would say, that's really nice. Well, they can afford it. And I'm like, well, just because they have money doesn't mean that they had to do that nice thing. So there's never gratitude. There's never appreciation. But then at the same time, if I ever said something, well, money doesn't grow on trees. So, I mean, these are the ways that this alienated mind gets so screwed up. So I think that this is hopefully something that you can understand what I'm trying to say here, and focus on that, and focus on the benefit of getting it, not the giver. Focus on the benefit, not the giver. Okay, next question comes from, let me see here. I'm going to answer this question. Sorry, I have a lot of questions here. From Mary. And Mary says, what is your recommendation regarding paying for college? I have saved money for my son's college education. The money is in my control. And again, this goes back to the money situation, right? Because here you've saved up, you've done a good thing, you've had forethought, you've had, you know, caring and all the things that a parent would appreciate. And yet you could be in a position where I don't know how much it is. And honestly, again, even if it's $100, hey, it's $100 towards your child's education, right? But they could just as easily take that money and go, yeah, big deal. It's all she ever did for me. Or take the money and do something completely different with it. And then you're like all the blood, sweat, tears, setting aside, sacrificing, whatever it is, right? So what I would do is I would actually try to engage with your child with this money, with this on his expectations of his future, of college, of paying for college. And quite honestly, I would not let it be a foregone conclusion that just because you saved it for him, that he naturally gets it. And I don't say that from a spiteful, like, well, you got to talk to me or I won't give you the money. I'm not saying it like that. But again, I've talked a lot before about dynamics and expectations. And when a habit happens that they can treat you anyway and still get money, still get all these different things, and you don't change the dynamic, then it just reinforces that they can do anything. So, and I'm sure the alienator's going, she's got the money. I know she's got the money. You're going to get that money. You know, we're going to take it right out from under her and leave her in the dust. All that stuff, right? So what I think is important is to actually let it not be a foregone conclusion that the kid can treat you any which way and you're just automatically going to get the money. I would actually make that kid, make your child earn that money. And what I mean by that is engaging in a conversation with you that explains, here's my plans, here's what I'm thinking, here's what I want to do. So it's not a talk to me or else, but it's a, well, this was saved for a purpose with this in mind. And I'd really like to get a sense of your perspective on life and your future and what you want to do. And if it does come to where you're paying for it, and I would imagine that you probably will end up doing it, I would absolutely make sure that that is paid directly to the school, not to the alienator, not to the child or anything like that. You want to make sure that money goes exactly what you earmarked it for. So again, I'm not going to say use it as a bargaining chip to not take it, you know, to take it away and to punish. But I would not let it be a foregone conclusion. I would not let it be where, hey, no matter what I do to this woman, there's a pot of gold waiting for me. Just change up the dynamic. Let them kind of go back on their heels a little bit. So I hope that helps. We're moving on to Janice's question. She says, I'm heading out of town for a wedding. The wedding of a daughter of a great friend. My daughter and the bride spent time together when they were growing up. My children are now 32 and 30. They were not invited to the wedding because of the alienation, and the children of this third party that also used to be a part of the lives were invited. So basically, there's a party going on. Everybody's invited except these two kids that have been alienated. And she says, you know, that's sad. Do you think that I should tell them where I'm going and why? I don't want to make them sad, but I do want them to reflect. And so, you know, that idea is, you know, hey, there's something going on without them because of, you know, either their behavior or their behavior because of the alienator. And should I tell them about it? Should I kind of, in some way, you say you don't want to do that, but you kind of want to rub their nose in it that this stuff is going on. And I get that because it's also to prove a larger point, not to punish, but to be like, you know, look, you got to check yourself. You got to look at what's happening. And this also dovetails in very slightly, very much with a question from Christy, who's been estranged from her son, been blacked out since March and 5 months now. And, you know, she's basically saying, well, my son has a friend whose family has shunned her since the divorce 2 years ago. And she says, I used to be friends with that family. And I've had thoughts of trying to reconcile with the parents for the hopes that if they befriend me, then maybe that can help my son and I reconnect in some way. So should I reach out to the family or should I leave them alone? And the reason that I kind of tell and I'm going to combine these two stories is that we're talking about using either things that are happening outside of the child, whether it be past relationships or events or other things to kind of prove a point or to bring it back. And in Janice's situation, you know, about telling them that she's going, I would say, first of all, it depends also on the type of relationship that you have with them. If you're in some relatively general communication, you know, then it may not be a big deal to say, oh, I was at so-and-so's wedding and this person was here and this person was here. It was a great time. And then I'm like, I wonder why I wasn't invited. Well, do you really want to know, like, why do you think you weren't invited? Well, I don't know, probably because they're jerks and they whatever, right? So somebody will make them the bad, make them the bad guy. But if you're in that situation where you can have that conversation and it can spark, and again, you say, well, why do you think you weren't invited? That's something that I think, okay, that's fine. That can have a conversation, and who knows where it will lead. If depending on the situation that you have with them and the communication you have from them, it would be kind of weird and it would seem petty to the child for you to reach out and say, hey, I know we don't talk, but this is what I did. So I don't know the exact specifics of it, but I would say, sure, go with the first option. Don't go with the second option. Don't reach out randomly just to kind of rub it in their nose, because that will seem like you're just rubbing in the nose. It'll be out of the blue. It'll look mean and petty to them. I'm not even saying that it is, but that's how it's going to look like to them. And so to go to Christy's standpoint, where she's saying, well, I've got this family that kind of shunned me. I think Christy, you know, what jumps out at me is that for some reason we're always attracted to or you know, going from the pot to the frying pan, where it's like, well, I don't have a great relationship with my kid, but maybe I could go to these people because of the alienating parent who has treated me like crap and garbage and turned my kid against me. Maybe I'll go to other people who completely turn their back on me. And maybe I'll be able to, you know, to turn them around. And then I'll be able to turn them around, and then they'll actually become advocates for me. So I definitely understand you're looking for opportunities. Like, who knows my kid that I can have some communication with, and maybe we can work something out and it can come back around. But the challenge with that is that you're putting yourself around what you're saying here. I think you're putting yourself around more toxic people. I think you're, for some reason, being drawn to, you know, some of the same players that were turned against you. And so I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying that's my perspective on it. I think you put yourself out there in a way to get hurt more. Yes, anything is possible. If you're in a situation where hey, how are you? And kind of, again, test the waters and see how it goes. Well, sure, you know, by all means, do that. But to actively pursue them and put yourself in that position where you could get rejected again, and then perhaps, you know, you become, you know, hey, you'll never guess who stopped by groveling today, you know, trying to get back in. Oh, so-and-so. Like, if these are people who shunned you, they're clearly buying your ex's line and everything else. So I just don't think that those are the people that you want to spend your time and effort into. With some of the other details that you provided that I don't have time to get into, all of those things, you know, you have some opportunities to build the relationship with him directly via school, via some of the things that you shared with me. I would really focus your efforts on building and strengthening that relationship. And again, remember, everybody, you know, go from where you're at now to the next logical step. So if it's not a whole lot of communication, if there's no communication, try to get a little communication. If it's a little communication, go for more frequent communication. If it's more frequent communication, but it's not really in depth, try to turn the depth meter on and get it going. So always just kind of strengthen what you might have and go to the next step. Don't always necessarily look to try to go, you know, right to the head of the class, if that makes sense. So I hope that helps you in some way with that family. Okay, now we've got a question from Howie. Let me grab a quick drink here. We're definitely going to go a little long on this call, so hope everybody can stay with me. Howie asks, Ryan, you speak of knowing what the regime has against you and being the opposite of them. For my youngest son, I'm pretty sure that the thing that's holding him back in this belief system is that, you know, I'm a blamer. For example, I was a few minutes, I was a few minutes late for the departure time. I was looking around for him about 30 seconds. Then I realized, oh, he went to the car. So I go back to the car and say, hey, there you are. He immediately comes back and says, oh, so it's my fault? It's my fault that we're late? So he says, I did a mea culpa. I said I was responsible for the 4 minutes of the delay and only 30 seconds was just looking around for him. And he says that the comment was intended as blame. But I can't seem to get ahead of this complaint. I'm always trying hard to avoid, you know, getting anywhere close to it. But it's, you know, it's impossible to be perfect 100%. He says, you know, the regime blames 100% of everything on me. It's always someone else's fault. So they're always the, you know, blaming me, but then saying, oh, you're blaming everybody else. So he says, you know, I just don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know how I can beat this rap of always being, you know, the bad guy who's always, you know, looking to blame somebody else. So he says, how can I, you know, how can I save myself from this? And I think that, you know, you have to look at the people. This is classic projection. So victims are always looking for someone else who's done them wrong, who's victimized them. Alienators are always looking for people, you're trying to screw me over, you're trying to hurt me, you're trying to end my relationship, you're trying to drive a wedge, you're trying to do all these different things. The same people are also, because of that, blaming. Oh, you did it. It was because of you. It was because of this that I didn't have all these things that I wanted, or because I'm not happy. It was always you getting in the way. And so we look at some of the reasons that these people are blaming and then projecting the blame on you is because, you know, it's all about control. They try to restore that sense of being controlled by blaming others. You know, so they're in constant fear. They want to try to control you by blaming you and make you feel that you're the bad person. They want to put you in that corner so that you might, you know, you can feel inferior to them. Because if you feel inferior, you can be controlled. You can be put on a leash. So they'll label you as selfish or arrogant or snobby by friends and use that as always a thing. Oh, so every time you say something, there he goes again. Oh, you know, he makes it poor little Johnny's fault that he was, you know, a couple minutes late. This guy is insane. This guy is always causing trouble. But it's truly them that are the ones that can make a mountain out of a molehill, that can take a nice situation, one wrong word, one wrong move, and the whole dynamic changes. And all of a sudden they blame, you know? And so you're right. The challenge is that your son is seeing learned behavior from the family members, and he could come and grow up as always being the victim and the blamer. Or, like me, I looked at some of the things that my family did, and of course, a lot of it stuck, but I never was somebody who was blaming other people. I was never somebody who was doing all of these things. It just didn't resonate with me. So it's not saying that it's going to be that way. So the question is, okay, what can you do? And when you're in this situation with your child, he says, oh, you're always blaming and everything else. Have a conversation. Have a father-son conversation that draws the line between, and say to him, hey, I want to have a conversation with you because there's a lot of talk about blame, but I want to actually talk to you about the difference between blame and responsibility. Blame is judgment. If I'm blaming you, I'm judging you. You did something wrong. But responsibility is ownership. Responsibility, it just says, yeah, my bad. It's like when a sports player, right? If a basketball player is throwing an alley-oop and they're a little bit off and it doesn't end up happening and the basket doesn't go in, and the camera will go back to the person and the basketball player's tapping his chest and going, you know, it's me. That's my fault. That's me. I missed the play. That's responsibility. That's ownership. But when the person who missed, you know, who didn't get the alley-oop, who didn't get the dunk, if they start going and they start pointing and they're irate at that person going, you didn't throw the ball right, your timing was off, all those different things, that's blame. Blame is accusatory. Responsibility and blame do not have to be the same thing. And so have a conversation that says, look, sometimes we can have a thing like, oh, hey, what happened? Like, oh, I couldn't find you, or I was late, or I was running late. It's not blame. It's just going, oh, got it. I was responsible for 4 minutes of this thing, and then I spent 30 seconds looking around for you. There's no blame in that. So it's a teachable moment. It's a high concept, but it's a teachable moment about blame versus responsibility and making sure that he knows that those are two different things. And as I've talked about before, You know, these are the types of conversations the alienating families are not having. So this is an opportunity for you to show up and show how you see the world and give somebody a perspective of something different. So again, you fight the regime through talking to your child, through building a relationship as best you can with your child. You know, you're probably not going to deal with them and get anything, make any progress with them, but you can make progress with your child. So I think that will definitely help you. And I think, you know, I talked about this learned behavior. Diane asks a question and says, Ryan, did your father always suspect that your mom was brainwashing you? Did he do anything to thwart it? Did he ever speak to the regime about it? And Diane, you know, looking back, you know, my dad says, wow, you know, I could see all of the signs because he could see how my grandparents were with my mom. He could see the different behaviors of like, wow, like, why are they, you know, dissing, you know, other family members? So he didn't know. It was like a gathering storm. Like, he could see it, but he didn't put the dots together. He didn't connect things. When I was 3 years old when they divorced and everything, you know, the walls went up. And so my dad always knew that he was, you know, that I was being constantly brainwashed. And to the point, though, that it wasn't even until we reunited and had conversations and even, you know, doing some videos that we've done together and sharing our story that he's like, wow, really? I didn't know that's what they were saying or that's how they were spinning it. Like he had no idea. He was just like, oh God, you know, I've been in those rooms in the spin room where they're, you know, tearing everybody down. I wonder if Ryan's dealing with that, but not to the level that he, you know, not to the level that once we started talking and comparing, you know, decades of notes, he was, you know, just completely flabbergasted. So, I mean, did he ever speak to the regime about it? I mean, all the time, you know, trying to have, you know, peace and civility and taking the high road and all of those things. He tried everything that he could. The biggest challenge was he just didn't know how powerful it was. He didn't know some of the things that he was, you know, traps that he was walking into. You know, some of the things that he did right was, you know, in the later stages, he never gave up. He was in constant communication. He, you know, did as much as he could, but he just didn't know the full gravity and the weight of what he was up against. And so I think that's, you know, that's always the biggest challenge. One thing that I, you know, kind of want to dovetail into and just touch on it briefly because I said I would was, you know, the idea of accusations. You know, there are parents out there that are accused of all kinds of different levels of accusations of abuse. And as we all know, when you know that you're not the one doing it, you realize what mental abuse that your child is going through because they're being exposed to lies and deceit and then being put through going to talk to people and saying, you know, my mom or my dad did this to me. And so we do have a new member of the group that's really dealing with a lot of this stuff and you know, talking with local police and they want to charge him with different form of assault. And he's talked to detectives and he's saying, you know, they're saying nothing is criminal. And he said, you know, this detective said, you know, he felt strongly that my daughter was not using her own words, but merely retelling stories that others have told her. I just want to acknowledge the fact that, you know, there's so much deeper layers with parental alienation and all these things where it's just so awful. And I really feel so terrible, you know, for you and for what people go through. And I actually want to thank people who chimed in on our message board or on the Facebook group. And especially Mary gave some great advice. She says, contact your lawyer, contact the guardian ad litem. If you have visitation rights, regardless of whether you've actually seen your daughter, enforce them. Get a deposition from the police officer who said you did nothing criminal. Consider talking with your daughter's guidance counselor at school. You know, she says, you know, if there's any other counselors, review Dr. Childress's book, slides or other materials. Think about this as like what your daughter is going through and this idea that it's psychological abuse. And so I just want to acknowledge that you're going through. It is definitely out of my realm of being able to know what to do when you get into the really legal stuff. I honestly don't know. It's something that I would really, really be speculating about. But I just want to thank the community and other people, in addition to Mary, who have, you know, kind of rallied around and given support and guidance, because these are the types of things, too, that really create a stigma. When you're dealing with, you know, friends and family and other people, and they, you know, you're dealing in a parental alienation situation, and you're talking about all these things, people go, well, we really don't know what the real story is. But when somebody does these abuse allegations, it's such a harder thing to fight, because people will turn off, you know, hearing your side of the story. And again, people will say, why would somebody make that up? Why would alienating parents do any of the things? They've created such trauma, such awful things, such selfish love that you really can't comprehend. It's like trying to understand why a psychopath would go out and do awful things. You just can't put yourself in that mind. It's so foreign to you. And so that's where a lot of good parents and people have a hard time understanding what parental alienation is, and that it's real, and that it can it with that control, with that mind control that we're talking about. And in relation to an abuse and things like that, I look at the damage that was done and what I was convinced of that my dad did that was nothing abusive. But if you add that ingredient in, It's so deadly. So I, you know, to deal with, obviously, it's so much harder to deal with. So again, just let's give lots of love and support to to the parents, including Tim, who's dealing with that, and I'm sure others as well. So thank you for that. Okay, I'm gonna have time to do about one more, I believe one more question, and then the quick little good news update. This question, and I'm sorry that I may not be able to get to everybody here. So Kathy asks, when a kid is, what's going on with a kid when he tells you need to be more kind and loving, and you are? That's my entire personality, to continue to reach out and stay in contact with him and his sister, even how they've treated me. He's 18, the sister is 22, and she says, I show unconditional love and continue to love and kind and provide kindness. And it's like he's telling me I need to be who I already am. You know, I've started to make headway, and then all of a sudden, you know, I'm sure the dad in some way caused angers and pulls away. You know, things are going good. Then two weeks later, it's bad again. And I just can't understand. So she says, you know, I just don't understand. What am I supposed to say to him? You know, when he says, be more loving, be more, kind. And she's looking for, you know, so what do I say to him? Like, how do I be more loving and kind? And I think this is where I mentioned in the beginning to share a concept with you, and you can kind of see in some of the ways I'm talking and tackling some of these issues that sometimes the answers you're looking for are actually questions. It's asking them to clarify what it is that they're saying. It's asking them to confirm, okay, I'm hearing that you want me to be more loving and kind. So can you, you know, son, can you define what more kind and loving means to you? Can you give me an example of an instance where I did something that wasn't kind and loving to you? And then after you tell me that story, tell me what you would have liked me to do. Tell me what would have been a more loving and kind thing to do. And because sometimes, again, we're looking for here's the response that I'm going to get. And it's sort of like, let's see you dance, you know, give me the right answer, lady, you know, I want you to be more loving, kind. You're like, I'm being loving and kind. What can I do? What more can I do? I don't understand. And you're trying to come up with all these things. And sometimes the answer is just to ask. It's like a hot potato. When they're saying that they want to give you the hot potato, and then you got to come up with a tap dance to show them that you're loving and kind. But if you actually like a hot potato, nobody wants to hold a hot potato. You go, great, I totally hear you on that. Take the hot potato back. Tell me what more loving and kind means to you. Give me an example. Because when you're trying to figure out what that means, then you're assuming that you're doing things right? You're assuming, well, I am loving and kind. you're assuming that you're doing things right in his eyes. But if you ask for his perspective, ask for his guidance, ask him to define what it looks like to him, that's what's going to actually help you understand. But right now, you're just assuming. You're assuming that he understands it. There's a great book called The Love Languages. It's the four love languages. Four or five love languages. I'm not sure. But anyways, do a Google search for the four love languages. And the reason that I bring that up is it's a far reach. It's a little bit of an aside, but there are different ways that people show their love. There are different things that people are different in how they give and receive love. And this is where you see in a lot of marriages and relationships where people will say, but I'm doing all of these acts of service. You know, I'm being so nice, I'm being kind, and I make dinner and I do all these things. And then you find out your spouse just didn't care about any of that. The way that he or she receives love is they just want to be told, thank you, I love you, you're beautiful, you're appreciated. Or the people that you may lavish language on them. You're so great, you're so loving. And they go, well, words just don't really do it for me. You got to show me. Like when I need help doing X, Y, and Z, don't sit at the computer, run across the room and help me out here. But unless you know that, you're literally spinning your wheels. So this child that you have who is messed up and under the influence of alienation and all that stuff, he is clearly not picking up on the love and kindness that you're giving, which means the easiest thing is to do is to ask him what that looks like to him. Ask him a question. Ask him to express himself and give you an example. What's either going to happen is he's going to tell you, hopefully, exactly what you need to know to make adjustments so that he can perceive your love and kindness better. Or when you say, give me an example, he's going to go, well, I don't know anything specific, but, you know, let him stew in it. Let him try to figure out, well, my story is thin. I don't even know what it actually is. Oh, crap. Come to think about it, it's just kind of the thing that when I'm with dad, we just sit around and say, yeah, she's awful. So make them defend their own story. So I hope that helps everybody. Okay, just a good news update from Bob and Joan, and says, hi, Ryan. I've not been on the last two calls, but hoping to make it on the next call. I hope you're on this call. If not, I hope you're joining me on the audio. So wanted to give you an update on how things have been going with communication between dad and daughter. They've been sending emails back and forth, keeping them light and just getting to know each other again. Very positive after 18 years. So happy we found you, Ryan. You gave us the courage to reach out. The son is a different story, but I'm not going to give up just yet. Or I'm not going to give up just taking it even slower with him. Thanks, Bob and Joan. So again, this is an example of a lot of what we've talked about, right? You know, they didn't have contact, now keeping it some back and forth, light communication. They've got two different kids where we kind of started in the original part of this call is looking at your children as, of course, separate and distinct. It's okay that you can start building a relationship with one and the other one is going to take a little bit of time, may need a different approach, may need to get more clarity and confirmation like we just talked about. Hey, how do you perceive me? I want to be as loving and kind and supportive as you as possible. How do you best receive that? Like, what does that look like to you? You know? So I'm really glad to hear that. Thank you so much for that update, Bob and Joan. So, listen, guys, it has been a true pleasure to go through these questions. I left a few of them on the table. I'm so sorry. But as our group grows here, I'm going to try as best as I can. I'm also going to try to do some additional videos here and there just for our group members, post them on our Reunite group Facebook page, and make sure you get an email notification that for those videos as well for some of the overflow content, because it is really important that I get to everybody's questions and everything. So I'm certainly trying best I can here. So I really appreciate it. We've gone about 75 minutes here, so I'm going to call it a night for us. I want to thank you again and also go forth until our next time. Continue to not give up hope. continue to remember that the most important thing in all of this is to remain the strong, loving, caring person that you are. Don't let parental alienation strip you of that, and continue to never give up. So thanks so much again. Look forward to talking to you in the Facebook group, and have a great evening. Thank you again.